welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 503 for Wednesday, the 27th of July, 2016. My name is Harry Lloyd, coming to you once again from the United Kingdom. It's interesting to be back, and joining me back on the show is Martin Darlington, who is still over in the desert, I believe. Martin, how are you doing?
Yeah, okay, we don't need that again, do we? No, all right.
Have to get your 79p pence worth or whatever it was.
Yeah. No, I'm good. I'm good, Harry. It's blisteringly hot here, and I'm still flying in a helicopter sans air conditioning. So I do a lot of sweating. But apart from that, life's pretty good. Number 503, good Lord.
Yep, we are.
I'm trying to think what the next significant one, because I can't think of any top racers who used three-figure numbers above 500. We've had a couple of triple ones, haven't we? And there was a 1, 2, 3, I remember, from the ages. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah.
But no, so I don't know, yeah, what the next significant one was.
Yeah, I'm not sure there are any big ones coming up, apart from the obvious one of episode 1000. But that's still a little way off, I think.
Yeah, let's hope so. Otherwise, it means that my life's flying past a lot faster than I'd really be happy. We've got some renewing subscribers.
Yes, we certainly do. A big thank you to James DeWitt, John Michael Allen, Neiman Bean, Stephen Helmuth, and James De Pretoro. Your contributions are hugely appreciated and help Motopod immensely. If you'd like to become one of those names that we get to read out almost every week, because Harry can never keep track of which PayPal emails he's read in his email or not, then you can go to the motopodcast.com website down the left-hand side. There's some PayPal links, as much or as little as you want. Every bit really does help. You can do a one-time donation, or you can be like those five fine names that we just read and set up a subscription so that we get a little bit each month to help keep us tracking along.
Exactly. Now, although our listener feedback in the show notes is empty, we have this afternoon received an email from Scott Cloninger.
Quite an interesting email.
Yeah, Cloninger in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And it was entitled WTF? And he said, my Desert Desmo racing team is now 20th in the Motopod MCN Fantasy League, one slot behind Hugh Jass Racing and Martin Darlington. Last week, we were reversed. In other words, he was one place ahead of me. He said, we have exactly the same BSB selections and both have Shaky Byrne as captain. How the fuck does that work? Does MCN automatically retard Yank participants because of our cheese consumption? Do they realise that Martin's Guinness fetish supports a significant part of the Irish economy and they simply want to reward him for that? Or is Martin simply a cheating twat? Did I mentally obliterate the possibility that he was ahead of me last week in order to preserve my sanity? Help a brother out here. And then he said, for what it's worth, this 49-year-old tosser put his Daytona 675 on the top step of the podium at a club race in Albuquerque a week ago. How's that for an old cheese eater? Racing other cheese eaters, of course. From Scott. Absolutely brilliant email. It made me laugh. It made me think. So I went back and looked, and he's absolutely right. With exactly the same team and the same captain, we have somehow swapped places.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if you had slightly different teams that scored the same points, maybe it was something like pole position, but with...
No, it's exactly the same.
Are you guys tied on points? Is it going like who has the most race wins or something, or...?
No, I'm just looking at that now, actually. I'll just bring that up. I mean, I replied to Scott and just said, you know, I mean, there was one week, I'm trying to think when it was. It was a couple of months ago, and it wouldn't allow me any transfers. And even though it said every week you'd get transfers, I'm looking at it now. No, for some reason, I'm 9 points ahead of Scott, and I can't remember exactly what it was last week. But no, I do remember seeing Desert Desmo Racing, thinking you wouldn't, because the reason it caught my eye, and he was one team ahead of me, definitely, so he's right in that, was I was thinking, you wouldn't want to take a Desmo Sedici across a desert, really. It wouldn't be my bike of choice to take on the Dakar Rally or anything.
No, but, um, yeah, bit hot.
Yes, so one week it wouldn't allow me any transfers, and the following week it gave me my two transfers. I used them, and then on the Friday I had a look again thinking, oh, I can't remember who it was. I was thinking, I thought he'd do well, and he was not, and it gave me another two transfers. So I thought I only used one of them, but so I used three that week, and yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The only thing I can imagine is whichever company provided MCM with that Fantasy League system last year charged them actual money, whereas this year they've done it for a pair of old worn tyres and a free subscription to the MCM newspaper. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But it seems like there's been some pretty consistent hiccups, unfortunately, with it this year.
Yeah, it's been, and you have to wait a couple of days for it to update, and you just think, come on, it's computers.
Yeah.
Unless they've only got one plug socket and have to unplug something else to plug it in. But very good. And I did actually follow the link that Scott provided us to read about his, he gets quite a good write about in Road Racing Weekly, I think it was. About his top of the step. And he's taken the lead in the 675. I assume it's a Veterans Cup. And I said to him, I even at 50, I think, you know what? At least once, I should just try and see what it's like to sit on a grid waiting for the lights to go out. I mean, actually sit on a bike on a grid waiting for the lights. Not just actually go and sit on a grid waiting for the lights to go out.
Yeah, sitting on a bike would make it
more productive. But all the advice I've had from Jules and Jim and people like that have just been, don't do it in an open class, because you'll have a bunch of 16-year-olds there who think they're immortal. And they will try and occupy the same bit of tarmac as you want to occupy at the next corner. And another course good point that Scott made was about my addiction to Guinness. So just not to disappoint the poor chap. Can
Classic.
You hear that?
Yep, yeah. You can hear it bubbling away.
So, news and miscellany.
Yes.
I forgot to change it out. I've updated the news. I just didn't update the bit that says updated as of. So that was updated as of.
No worries. So we've had a MotoGP test. Teams pretty much went directly from the Saxon Ring to Spielberg, the Red Bull Ring, back-to-back rings in MotoGP. Of course, they will be there after the summer break, but Ducati had rented out the circuit for a private test. Every MotoGP team except for Repsol, Honda, and Tech 3 were there. Interestingly, Bradley Smith, today, the day that we're recording Wednesday, he's done a private test there on a World Endurance Spec R1 to get to know the track, because I'm not sure why Tech 3 didn't choose to run there.
Hull's gone across the Suzuka, hasn't he?
He's a bit busy. He's a bit busy with that.
But his teammates are,
Nakasuga and Lowe's.
Nakasuga and Alex Lowe's, not Bradley Smith this year.
No, even Smith though, decided. I don't know if Smith decided not to, if Yamaha said no. I'm not sure which way it went.
Yeah, because Paul's leaving them as well, isn't he? So
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So Monster Yamaha Tech 3 weren't there, and then Repsol Honda weren't there, but that's because Ducati didn't invite them. Speculation as to why Ducati didn't invite them ranges from everything from that both Marquez and Pedrosa have already ran at the circuit twice on the RCVS, the street bike. And then also perhaps that Ducati are a bit upset that Honda played a part in getting winglets banned for next year.
Yeah, the big meanies. Yeah, it was interesting, though. The unofficial times, which were probably fairly accurate.
Yeah, I mean, I'd assume that they're using more or less the same timing system that MotoGP will use. So we're in a good ballpark.
And it's only called unofficial because they don't have someone from FIM there to rubber stamp it and say, yes, this was all done with calibrated, blah, 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 blah. It's in no one's interest for them to lie anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
If anything, they'd lie about, they'd want people to think they were slower than they actually are, you'd think.
Yeah.
But everyone on Wednesday, pretty much everyone, I think, improved their time from the Tuesday. Andrea Iannone was quickest with a 1:23.24. Now, that gives the impression it's quite a short track. I mean, that's sort of Laguna-type times, isn't it?
Yeah, from memory, I think Laguna was like that, roughly.
Yeah, I'd have to look back, but it's not that short. It's just bloody fast. I mean, it's very Thruxton-esque, isn't it? Having just had BSB at Thruxton, that there's really, it's like straight gentle corner straight, gentle corner straight. It's like going around a 50 pence piece rather than...
Yeah.
If people haven't used British coins, a 50 pence piece is a... was it a septagon, is it? I think so.
Something like that. Australia also has the 50 cent piece in Australia. It's pretty similar. So that right. covers most. I just looked up Laguna Seca in the last year that they ran their pole position was a 121.1.
Mm.
So
check us out. And I did that without you having to send me a little message saying, if you say this, you look dead clever. So yeah, Ian Oni at 123. Dovi was over 0.4 of a second behind him, also in the 123s, as was Casey Stoner.
Yes.
Who actually crashed, and there was this big thing that Casey was running a bike without wings, but when the bike he crashed on had wings, and he had been running the hard tie, and he'd gone out on the soft, and you know, Casey being Casey, he didn't blame anything other than just, no, it's just, you know, I was a bit unfamiliar, but he was okay. Hector Barbera continued his absolutely stellar season. He was fourth quickest. Then we had the two Yamaha, Movistar Yamahas of Rossi and Lorenzo, then Vinales and Espargaro. And it's interesting that the bikes all come in groups. You've got four Ducatis, two Yamaha, the two factory Yamahas, the two Suzukis. Then you get Scott Redding on the Pramac. Then there was Johnny Hernandez, Cal Crutchlow, Eugene Laverty, Jack Miller, Danilo Petrucci, Tito Abate, Michele Pirro, and only a fraction behind Michele Pirro, Mika Kallio and Tom Luthi on the AGMs, and people were saying, "Wow, you know, they were actually 2 seconds off. They were 2 seconds off Ian Oni. But if you look at, say, Rossi and Vinales, they're only a second off them. That's pretty damn impressive.
And especially when you consider that it's Mika Kallio and Tom Luthi on those bikes. Kallio, you know, he was a former MotoGP rider, but he wasn't fast enough to keep his seat. And Tom Luthi's done, I think, 2 tests on the KTM. And before that, his only other MotoGP experience was half a day testing the Honda back when he won the 125cc title and Honda gave it to him as a bit of a reward.
Yeah.
So, you know, for those guys to be that close, it does bode very well for KTM. Interestingly, Aprilia weren't running transponders. And sort of the common theory is that Aprilia didn't want to look too embarrassed by KTM because... Even if KTM were, you know, half a second back on Aprilia, that's still very good for KTM, who have no racing experience, whereas Aprilia had all of the CRT and open class days, and then have also had 2 days, not 2 days, what am I talking about, 2 years in MotoGP. So,
now, But that implies that Aprilia knew KTM would be fast. Now, I'm sure within the paddock, information is passed, and people go, bloody hell, apparently that KTM's quite quick. And I also think, is it not in Aprilia's interest to know what times they're doing? You know?
I'm sure that they had their own way of timing it. You know, all those bikes have lap timers and stuff like that. So they probably have a pretty rough idea of what times they were doing.
And they were running, was Sam Lowe's running?
Sam Lowe's ran for the first day along with Mike Demeglio. Then the second day was Demeglio and Bautista because Bridle was still out with a concussion.
Right. And interestingly, I got this from Autosport, the table of the times. They don't mention Loris Baz, and yet he did run there.
I think that could just be an error on Autosport's part.
Yeah. Yeah,
Baz was quite far down on the timesheets because he's still recovering from his quite bad foot injury. So I think he was probably just ahead of Pirro, just behind Tito Rabat.
Yeah, I mean, interesting circuit. I watched your very good little vignette about it on MotoGP.com. But it's quite cool. I'm like, that's Harry. I know him. And the cats weren't interested. There was no one else in the house. So I kind of wasted some oxygen there, but never let that stop me before. You know, but it's only got 9 corners. It's a clockwise track, which is, you know, the standard, I suppose. And it is bloody fast. The Yamaha's unlikely to race. And it does look a bit goat track. I mean, I can't believe that Formula One were there. It's not a big sweeping track. And the surface looked like 1970s racetracks did, you know, different color bits of tarmac. It just looks a bit worn.
I think that there are plans to undergo some changes to the circuit. before they do race there, because lots of the riders were a bit concerned about the safety at the track. Casey Stoner, he tweeted something pointing out how close the walls are to the track. I think it's turn two is where you're coming off that huge back straight, and the wall is very close. So
yeah.
You can sort of understand why they're a bit worried.
And as, of course, we saw with poor old Louis Salom, and incidentally, we've not put it in, but if people want to read, the FIM have given their initial report on Louis Salom's fatal crash at Catalunya a few weeks ago, and it looks like incredible bad luck.
The
bike hit the air fence, and he followed it in at such an angle that it bounced back, and basically the bike hit him in the chest. He was going one way, it was going the other, and he was going pretty fast. So it does raise concerns. That's the first circuit, not caused by the circuit, but you know what I mean. The first fatality we've had since Kato at Suzuka in 2003, as far as I can remember, that wasn't being hit by a following rider.
Yes.
You know, and as we've discussed before, if we're going to do anything but do time trials, if we're going to have more than one bike on the circuit at any one time, then that's a risk you really can't legislate against. Mm. Anyway, World Superbike silly season. This is from Motomatters.com. David Emmett reporting that a very strong rumour, an increasingly strong rumour, Marco Melandri is indeed going to make his way back to World Superbikes. But I hadn't seen this one coming, to join Chas Davis at Aruba.it Ducati. Because obviously Davide Giuliano, we were pretty sure he was going to go.
Mm.
There was a lot of speculation that Eugene Laverty might join that team, but they're going for Melandri. Apparently he's going to ride for nothing and bring a lot of... When they say he's going to ride for nothing, I assume if he wins, he'll expect a bonus.
Yeah, it's probably nothing unless he gets a podium, in which case he probably gets a pretty decent podium bonus.
Or points, I suppose. But he does, of course. And they said he still attracts quite a lot of sponsorship. And I'm like, really? You know,
maybe.
Good. I'm glad, because he has been until Jack Miller, him and Tony Elias in the same season were the last two satellite riders to win MotoGP race. Yeah, the guy's been a brilliant rider, but I thought he was finished. I thought he was done.
Yeah, so did I, to be honest. But, you know, Marco Melandri refuses to give up, so can't fault him for that one.
No. And apparently Davide Giuliano has expressed a desire to explore options in Moto2.
Oh, well, him and Franco Morbidelli would be a bit bonkers in Moto2.
Yeah.
Both those guys are a bit aggressive.
Yeah. I don't know. That seemed a strange idea for him to me. And also, it seems very likely that Stefan Bradl is likely to join Tenkata Honda squad alongside Nicky Hayden, because Michael van der Mark had a renewal clause which expired at Laguna Seca, and he has not exercised it. There's a rumour that the new Fireblade for next year won't be a ground-up new bike, which is what we need, as we've discussed over in the show in recent weeks. We'd have probably heard if it was going to be by now.
Yeah, you'd think that, like, at least MCN would have a photo or something, but no.
Well, the problem is, I think when they trotted that out the last 3 years, people have realised it's the same, you know, impression with just different colours. It looks like it's going to be an evolution of the current bike, and they think that Van der Mark is likely to go to Patty Yamaha, possibly with a deal of, yeah, if either of the new guys at Tech Tour don't work out, maybe we'll chop you across to MotoGP. You know, he's a really young lad. He's got plenty of time.
Yeah.
And it looks like Sylvain Guintoli will be the one to leave. Obviously, he's had a very disrupted season with injury. Unless, of course, Van der Mark were to go to one of the MotoGP Ducati independent teams. Aspar and Vinci Blusens are the only ones that have potentially got spare seats, depending on what happens with Eugene Laverty, Loris Baz, and Yoni Hernandez. And it looks like the second Mark VDS seat almost certainly is going to be Tito Rabat for another year, which I'm kind of glad about, but I just hope he looks a bit happier next year.
Yeah, I don't know. Rabat, I don't know. He makes improvements every time he hits the track, right? But I just don't know if there are enough improvements.
No.
So, we'll have to see what happens with Rabat. Also with Miller, you know, for both Rabat and Miller, it's make or break time for both those riders next year. So in 2018, we could potentially see two brand new riders at Mark VDS. Who knows?
It is, but I do think, and I know that win kind of came out of nowhere, but no one else has. There's been wet races over the last 10 years, just about every season we have at least one or two. There have been really weird wet to dry, back to wet, or dry to wet, back to dry races. You know, Jack won a race.
Yeah, and he's had three top tens in a row now. So
yeah, he really seems to have, I don't know, knuckled down. And I know we've joked, Dave and I were joking last week about, you know, he didn't look like MotoGP rider. He does now. He looks like someone's given him a kick up the ass or a pep talk, or he's just looked in the mirror and thought, you know what, I need to get doing this thing, or it's going to go away from me. I suspect in Moto3 he found it quite easy because he has clearly got a huge amount of natural talent, and he could just muscle it around. And sometimes it went wrong because there's other people with huge amounts of talent. Now it's suddenly like, oh my god, okay, everyone here has got huge amounts of talent. And
yeah, I mean, for MotoGP, you sort of have to be really, really good.
But in the best traditions of Motopod's ridiculousness, we thought we'd just quickly go through next season's teams as we know them and make silly predictions that hopefully no one will remember of who's going to come top. Because apart from Marquez and Pedrosa, pretty much, in fact, I think every team is likely to have changed its format except, oh, sorry, Mark VDS as well and LCR because they've only got Cal. Mm-hmm. So Rossi Vinales, well, everyone knows, I think Vinales will finish in the table higher than Rossi next year. Harry?
Vinales or Rossi? I don't know. That one's hard. I think I'll go with Vinales as well.
I just think Rossi's another year up. Vinales has shown what he can do on the Suzuki this year. You know, he's really come on after last year's great start. This year, he really is putting it together. And then he's going to be on one of the best two bikes in the paddock, or as it is this year, of course. We don't know what's going to happen. Marquez Pedrosa. Oh, hang on. Let me think about that one. I think Marquez will probably finish harder than Pedrosa.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one as well.
Now, this is an interesting one. Dovizioso and Lorenzo.
Lorenzo, for sure.
Yeah, Lorenzo, for sure. I'd agree with that. And yeah, his head seems to be somewhere where it shouldn't be at the moment, but we've seen this happen to him before 2008. You know, throwing himself at the scenery, his first season, started so well, finished really painfully, went away, got his head together, came back, admitted that he considered whether he really wanted to do this anymore, came back, okay, Rossi beat him in 2009, but he got better then 2010. You know, he's done this before, he reinvents himself. Suzuki, Iannone and Rins.
Iannone, 100%.
I'm thinking Iannone, yeah.
There's actually quite an interesting video with Rins on MotoGP.com that Dylan Gray did in Aragon about Rins' riding style. So if you haven't seen that, go check that out. It's not super relevant to his move to MotoGP, but it's pretty interesting.
Right, okay. Yeah, we'll have a look at that. This is one I can't call. Smith or Pol Espargaró. Bradley Smith, Pol Espargaró on a brand new KTM bike. Which, I mean, if you take this year, you'd say, oh, Paul, easy. Last year, oh, Bradley, easy.
Yeah, I don't know. With Smith, it's hard to tell, you know, is it the Bridgestone Michelin change that's messed him up? Is it that he already had a contract, so now is, you know, his mind is elsewhere? Or is it, because if it's the change from Michelin to, if it's the change to Michelin, then Smith isn't going to have an easy year next year. But then KTM is a completely different bike. We have no idea how it handles, what sort of style it suits, and all that sort of thing. So, huge unknown. I am going to go Bradley Smith because I think he will have a point to prove. And we saw last year when he had a point to prove that he was very, very quick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he probably knew from the beginning of this season. In fact, we know he did know virtually from the beginning of this season that he wasn't getting his contract renewed. So, maybe that's just, you know, poured a little bit of water on the fire of his enthusiasm. Aprilia, Sam Lowes and Aleix Espargaró. I've got to be honest, I think probably Aleix Espargaró next season.
Yeah, I think so.
It'll be Sam's first season in MotoGP, you know, so yeah. Folger Zarco, For me, there's no doubt who the better rider is. I think it's Zarco.
Yeah, I think so as well. But again, you know, it's so hard to gauge when riders make the step up. You know, even Stefan Bradl, he didn't have that rough an adaptation when he moved up from Moto2, but then he sort of slid away, and it's really hard to know.
Yeah, it is. Now, it was a very good point made by someone. I can't remember if it was Dave last week or if it was someone when I was watching BT, that Zarco and Folger have never ridden Bridgestone.
Yeah.
So that, and Rins. They've never ridden, and Sam Lowe's, never ridden Bridgestone. They have
fresh.
No idea. So there won't be any of this, we used to be able to do this. They'll just be completely fresh, and they'll just learn the bike and the tyres at the same time, which might really be quite helpful. Miller and Rabat, I think Jack Miller's probably going to maintain his upward trajectory. Whether that will ever be enough to get onto a factory bike and be a regular race win contender, I don't know. But yeah, no, I'm a little bit turned around on the fella. I really am.
I'm glad. So we have Miller and Rabat then. LCR, I think it's going to be a tough one, but I think that Crutchlow might come out as the fastest rider at LCR Honda next year.
Unless Lucio jumps on a bike, because I reckon he's still got it, yeah.
Yeah.
Pramac Ducati, Petrucci and Redding. If they both start the season fit, you know, I think Scott.
I'm going to go with Petrucci just to be a bit contrarian. I think that both Redding and Petrucci are incredibly equally matched in terms of riding. And like, other than the factory guys where, you know, obviously the bikes and stuff and the factory guys are the best of the best, I think that that's probably the closest team that we have throughout the field.
Yes. In terms of equipment, you'd have to put Tech Toire traditionally have been, you know, generally they've been the leading satellite team, but they've got two brand new riders coming up from Moto2. So yeah, it's funny actually. I cannot imagine Petrucci and Redding not being mates, except for the fact they're on the same team.
Yeah, I don't think Petrucci has many enemies. To be honest, he seems pretty neutral on everyone.
Avintia, we're pretty sure Hector Barbera will stay with Avintia Blusens, but
I had read something today. I can't remember where I read it, but apparently Loris Baz is set to stay there as well.
I hope so. He's had a disruptive season, but I think he's acquitted himself well. He's been really unlucky. He's been taken out by Bautista'd. I think that's a badge of honour in the MotoGP paddock. Until you've been taken out by Alvaro, you know, you haven't really been there long enough. And that, which brings on to Aspar Ducati, we're pretty sure they signed Alvaro Bautista, who'll be alongside him, whether it's Eugene Laverty or Yoni Hernandez. And as someone keeps saying, Eugene wants a newer bike. He really should be going to an older bike because Hector's making it work.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, those are the two still really unknown seats. And as you say, those could be anything, but it's looking pretty good. And you know, as we always say, I'm more than happy to be proven wrong with any of my predictions because, you know, I'm more than happy to be surprised by someone who I had previously written off, so.
I mean, every season has its little quirks. I can't think of a season where there was no, you know, I mean, drama or twists or, oh my goodness, someone who you expected to be a contender just has a dreadful season. Either they fall off a lot or they're just not there. I mean, Richie Chinari. Jorge Lorenzo, yeah. I mean, Marquez last year, it was like, hang on, you know, he wins his first season. Second season, he goes, 11 races, and he wins the first, whatever. I think it was 11, wasn't it? He won the first.
10 or 11, yeah, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And then last season, it's suddenly like, okay, someone removed the brakes from his bike because he just seems running into the scenery all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you're an idiot, you might say, no, he just thought he'd make it more exciting. And he went a little bit too far down that road. But yeah, it was definitely, there's always something. And I think next season is likely to be the best season ever.
Hopefully, that's what we always say. And so far, it's going well so far.
And nothing against Marquez, because he has been just as ridiculously quick this year, but with a lot of extra added racecraft. I think he's really matured this season, and you know, hats off to him. But just from the point of view of wanting a title race that goes, if not the distance, a bit more of the distance than it seems to be at the moment, I would like to see Lorenzo and Rossi, you know, get back up. And I can't see it happening at the Red Bull Ring.
No, they're going to have to pull out a bit of magic. Because, yeah, you know, we've seen from this test that it seems like it's going to be a Ducati track. But without the Repsol Honda pair there, there is still a pretty big unknown going into the weekend. But I think that it is up to the Repsol Honda guys to stop the Ducati charge.
Yes. Yeah.
Speaking of Ducatis, as we come along to the British Superbike Championship.
Oh, nice segue.
It was Shane Byrne who was on pole position around the thrilling Thruxton circuit. He did a 1:14.315 in the Super Pole qualifying session. He'd actually done a 1:13.8 in Q2, which I believe is a new outright lap record at Thruxton. But then he clipped a curb or something during qualifying, so I couldn't quite recreate that. But he was ahead of Tommy Bridwell. Tommy Bridwell on the Suzuki in second. We'll come back to that in a second. Dan Linfoot rounded out the front row. Luke Mossy, he was fourth, ahead of Michael Laverty, Lee Jackson, Billy McConnell, Alistair Seely, Jake Dixon. Dixon doing very well. This is still only his third race, and he's qualified inside the top 10. Then Peter Hickman in 10th was the leading Kawasaki JG Speedfit bike.
Yeah, and that is seen as the top team, and they couldn't. None of them got into Q3.
Yeah,
there were two Kawasakis in there, but it was Luke Mossy on the Quattro plants, and Billy McConnell on the FS3 racing Kawasaki. Yeah. So
Haslam was 15th, and then James Ellison was 23rd on the grid.
Yeah.
Richard Chianari, he was 16th, so 14 places behind his teammate Tommy Bridwell, his teammate whose race wins I can count on one hand.
Yes. Yeah, it was interesting, and there was an awful lot of stuff about the S0 and S1 tyres. They have a softer option and a harder option, and a lot of the guys were talking about the fact that this soft tyre will run. They were doing race simulations of 15 laps, and I think it's a 23 or 24 laps. I'm trying to remember. I think it was 23 for the full race.
Sounds about right.
They were only running 15 lap race simulations, so they didn't know what was going to happen. But they were saying, well, the zero, when it goes off a cliff.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, okay. So we got to race one on Sunday, and they were going, they'd done 11 laps, and Stuart Easton crashed as his bike basically split the case and vomited oil all over the track. Thankfully, Stuart Easton was okay.
Although after this weekend, he and the EPME Yamaha team have decided to go their separate ways.
Oh, I didn't know that. Right. Okay. Thank you. God, you're well up to date. Yeah, that's a shame. He's a good lad, Stuart Easton. I spoke to him at Alton Park a few years ago. Thoroughly nice, engaging young man. It's a shame. He's shown so much promise, and it's never quite come together.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who just always has some, you know, big injury or something like that that just sort of seems to put him on the back foot basically constantly, so.
So they stopped the race, then they said, right, it's going to be a 12-lap, well, originally I think it was going to be a 14-lap dash for the restart, and then it rained for a little bit, so they went, okay, sorry, no, I think it was always going to be 12, that's right, but they delayed restart to see what was going to happen. And then the rain went away and they said, no, it's fine. The track's dry. Yeah, they were going to do this, the 12-lap restart. And I hate aggregate races.
This is something that, like, I saw a lot of people, like, especially after Assen, lots of people were complaining about, like, oh, why didn't the first part of the race count for anything? I'm guessing these people were mostly Valentino Rossi fans, let's be honest.
Well, it counts for your grid position for the restart,
like,
and that's
it. I don't understand it, because if you go back and look at, like, the 500cc races when they'd have to red flag a race for rain, trying to follow an aggregate was the most confusing thing in the world, even if you had the best commentators in the world. Because basically, no matter what, you're having to do math on the fly, which is never a good thing in a motorcycle race. And it seemed confusing for the riders. I mean, obviously, having never ridden in an aggregate race, but, you know, say if Max Biaggi had been leading the race by 10 seconds, you know, then he's sitting fourth or fifth in the race restart, trying to manage how far behind he is from Valentino Rossi, who's 8 seconds ahead. It's just confusing and bad watching for everyone. So I have no idea why people were complaining about it. Like, aggregate racing is not good.
And yet, I think it's Matt Oxer. I know someone I hugely respect in the world of motorcycling journalism prefers them. So both halves do count, and says, come on, all you need is a, you know, basic knowledge of mathematics. I'm like, hang on, I have to do a flying logbook. I hate adding hours and minutes together. It does my head, or minutes and seconds in this case.
Yeah, people complain about having to convert miles per hour to kilometers per hour and vice versa. And
yeah, I think
I don't know. Yeah,
this is a simpler way. I want the person who's in front to be the person that's winning.
Yeah.
And the one who's behind to be the person who's not winning. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, keep it simple, stupid. So I think it's the better way to do it. But you kind of understand, you know, I mean, Shaky had pulled out a huge lead. But it's, in a way, it's no different to a safety car coming out. And BSB use that. Most car racing use that. And it is what it is. I don't think there's a perfect solution. It's the same. Do you do flag to flag? Do you? If it starts to rain, do you red flag it and bring them in and restart? You know, how do you do it? It works. So anyway, we went out and we had this 12-lap dash. But interestingly, because James Hayden was saying, well, you know, obviously they'll probably all go for the soft tyre now. And Matt Roberts had to say to him, no, they're not allowed to change them. And he went, well, you used to be able to. Well, maybe you did, but you can't anymore. And then he started talking to the riders. They said, well, of course, with the new rules, we can't change tyres, so we've got to go back out on the same ones we had on. Wow. And I'm thinking, can they change settings? I mean, is someone going to watch every bike to make sure, you know, someone doesn't say, give me another click of rebound or preload or whatever these technical terms are? I don't know what they are. I've just heard about them. You know, you don't know. Can they put more fuel in? Probably not. Who'd want to? But... So anyway, they went out again, and Shane Byrne basically did the same again, not quite to the same degree, but there were some really good, I mean, elbow to elbow, not quite fairing bashing, but some pretty bloody hard moves being put in. Michael Laverty, Jesus, he's got that beard. BMW don't seem to be able to do much in many of the series we watch, but in BSB, he's got that thing singing.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, BMW seem to really suit the British tracks because, you know, you also have in stock Thau. I think that every race bar one this year has been won by a BMW, and the race that was won by a Honda was Keith Farmer when it was on a wet or drying track. So, yeah, it seems like BMW is going quite well in Britain.
I mean, what was noticeable, though, we were saying earlier about these tyres, is... Christian Idem was right up the front to start with. Dan Linford was right up the front on the Honda, on the Honda Racing Honda, and really looking good. And then he just went off a cliff. They just went backwards and were just getting chewed up by people. And then people who had been at the back, who I assume were on the harder tyre or who knew how to look after the tyres, came charging forward. I mean, we had Richie Chianari finished in the top 10. And that's saying something. Jakob Smerts was in the top 10, and Jakob hasn't been around the top 10, I think, for a while. But we had Chamberlain, Michael Laverty, Luke Mossy came through for a third place, did very well. Tommy Bridewell was fourth. James Ellison came through to fifth. Leon has
Ellison. Fair play to him.
Leon had been chasing the leading pack, and then he went backwards. He ended up 13th. It was crazy. It was just... really weird. Dan Linford actually had a mechanical and had to pull over and just stop.
I think that's because his tyre was more or less down to the canvas.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in his case, the tyre went off and he was going backwards. And then it was a case of, this is actually going to blow or kill me. We had quite a lot of DNFs. Lee Jackson. And when did Lee Jackson become Lee Bob Jackson? It sounds like a country and western singer.
I don't know. That's just one of... Burnicle's nicknames for people. If you go on Twitter, you can play Burnicle Bingo every BSB race weekend, which is quite amusing.
Do you know, I didn't even know that, but I will.
You should,
I do follow Jack.
You should definitely go to, the account is Burnicle Bingo. It's a bit of a parody account, but it is it's quite funny.
Excellent. I like funny accounts. Deluded Brendan, which is supposedly I can't remember his name now. What's his name? The ex-Liverpool manager is now manager of Celtic.
I have no idea. I'm the wrong person to ask about football.
Brendan something, anyway. They were beaten by a team of part-timers from Gibraltar. Celtic were in their pre-qualifying for the Champions League the other day, and he said, "That's not embarrassing. We knew it'd be a hard game." We're like, "What?" The customs officer scored the goal or something, or a policeman, I remember. Anyway, I'm digressing. So, yeah, Lee Jackson, Dan Linfoot, Jack Kennedy, Alistair Seedy, Danny Buck and James Rusbrodie, Stuart Easton, Jenny Timothy, and Howie Mannering Smart failed to finish, which is a real shame. In fact, Stuart Easton obviously didn't start. Jenny didn't start. She'd had a crash or a mechanical in the first half of that race. She would have been allowed to restart, but they just didn't have the parts.
Yeah.
And again, no, these are people who have normal jobs during the week, and you know, they don't have a factory behind them, and you know, all power to them. Yeah, Shaky got fastest lap, which was a 1:15, significantly slower than qualifying the day before. And then we went to race two, and Shaky took off again, and this time it looked like, oh, he's gone, he's away. And then Michael Laverty caught him up really quickly after a couple of laps. Was it two laps? Mm. And Shaky had a broken gear. You could see him stamping his foot trying to get the gears to work. And James Whitham said, I don't think that's a gearbox problem. That's a gear, you know, that's something mechanical between the shifter and the gearbox. And Jack Pernickel said, well, he's going back into the pits. They'll be able to fix it. And James Wood just started laughing and went, no, they won't. and it was just like, no, you ain't going to fix that in time to get him out again and look for it. So Shaker was out of it, which you know, gutted me and Craig. Who we'll get to when we get to the Fantasy League. But because I had Shaky as my captain. So very nice in the first race, not so good in the second. I thought, don't worry, Leon will have sorted out his tyre problem and he'll come fifth. Damn.
Yeah, not quite.
But Michael Laverty never really, towards the end of the race, was hugely challenged, but we had a brilliant fight between Jason O'Halloran and Shaky's teammate Glenn Irwin, who got the B Weiser Ducati team, put a smile back on their faces. His poor bird looked like he was ready to rip someone's head off when he saw, you know, Shaky pull in. But Glenn Irwin got his first podium. Luke Mossy was fourth, Leon was fifth, Peter Hickman was sixth, James Ellison seventh. So the JG Speedfit Kawasaki's all coming in together, fifth, sixth, and seventh. Mm. Tommy Bridewell, Dan Linfoot again. You know, again, we did see these people still persisting with the softer tyre, and it surprised me after the experiences in the first race, people going backwards. Richard Cooper had a pretty torrid time. He didn't finish. Richard Kinnari just outside the top 10 this time in the 11th. Jakob Smirts, 12th. Chris Nidenth was 13th. Josh Hook. Now, Josh Hook arrived with a lot of, real positive press about him. Wow, this kid's good. Mm. It's not working out for him at the moment, is it?
No, I don't think that the WD-40 team is the most competitive in the Superbike class, to be fair to Josh. No. Josh was sort of a big deal in Australia, and Australian Superbikes did very well there. But since stepping onto the world stage, not done so much. Josh Hook, along with Richie Kiyonari and Leon Haslam, will all be at the Suzuka 8-Hour this upcoming weekend. Josh Hook has been on the podium, I think it's twice at the Suzuka 8-Hour with the FCC TSR Honda squad. So, you know, he clearly has some ability, right? Because, you know, you don't get on the podium in Suzuka by fluke.
No, of
course. And last year, Josh Hook, him and Dominic Agata did it as a two-rider team, because I don't think that Carl Smith did a single stint. So there is some pace there. It's just, he's just one of these guys who, you know, you get a couple of bad deals with a couple of bad teams and your career can very quickly go from being very, very promising to, oh, now you're a guy having to pay for a ride and, you know, you're picking up one or two points and just all sorts of stuff like this. So, tricky.
And that's the thing at this level. I mean, we mentioned Jenny Timoth earlier. When I interviewed her in her workshop in Ellesmere Port, I remember her saying about one weekend when that she'd been racing, and Shaky's team, it was when she was he Honda? I can't remember which team.
I think she's always ridden on a Honda.
She's always been Honda. I can't remember Shaky being on a Honda.
Shaky was on a Honda when he came back to BSB when he was in an HM Plant Honda alongside Kiyonari. Right,
yeah, it must have been that year. And she was saying that, in fact, that doesn't really matter because it wasn't about bikes, it was about tyres. But Shaky's team were giving Jenny the tyres that they were like, okay, that one's finished. Now, to her, that was a good quality tyre. And you just think, oh my goodness. You know, this is so, like what I was just saying about Josh Hook there, I don't know how, you know, what level of upgrades they've got, whether that bike is a 2014, 15, 16, 2008, you know, you just don't know. I don't know. I'm sure Dave would probably know. So the standings, how that leaves it is Shaky has pulled out a 15-point lead on Leon Haslam, despite not finishing race two. Shaky now has 27 podium points. And, of course, we've only got three more rounds before the showdown cutoff. And there's been quite a change in the showdown positions. Shaky and Leon Haslam are looking pretty unassailable. So is Jason O'Halloran. Shaky's on 181. Leon's on 166. Jason's on 146. Michael Laverty, who before this weekend wasn't in the top six, with 45 points under his belt, he now very much is. In fourth place with 135. 17 points behind him is Dan Linfoot on 118. And then James Ellison on 109. But only 2 points behind him is Christian Iden on 107, who had been in the top six and got pushed out.
Yeah,
Michael Labby.
Yeah, Christian Iden's results have very much gone downhill. You know, podiums in the opening round, then 2 seconds. And then now nothing, you know, he's scored 10, he scored 10 points at Snedden, and he scored 3 points at Thruxton across both races.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really interesting. You've got James Ellison is in the sixth place on 109, 2 points behind him is Christian Iden, 1 point behind him is Richard Cooper, also on a BMW. And then there's a bit of a drop, 97's Luke Mossy, 96 is Peter Hickman, but they're certainly by no means out of it. Tommy Bridewell, 85 on the Suzuki.
It's always that final, that sixth spot in the showdown that is always the most exciting because, you know, Shaky Byrne, Leon Haslam, Michael Laverty, they're pretty much a guarantee for the showdown before the season even starts.
Yeah, Ricci Kiyonari. Oh, no, sorry, yeah.
No, where is Kiyonari? Sorry, Kiyonari has 23 points. And this weekend, where he scored 14 points across the two races, is actually his most successful weekend because before this, he'd only scored 9 points at the opening race in Silverstone and then spent the four races in between that not scoring anything. So, two thumbs up for Richie Kiyonari.
Unbelievable. Yeah, really is. And Dave, unfortunately, due to work commitments, wasn't able to come on the show this weekend. He equally, due to work commitments, wasn't able to go to Thruxton, but he will be delighted because Jordan Weaving, his lad, won a race, and Carl Phillips, who's still leading the BSB Superstock 600 Championship, could only finish 10th. So, well done, Jordan. He won by a third of a second, so it sounds like he had a bit of a beat-up with Keenan Armstrong, both on Kawasaki's, although different teams. So he's 29 points behind Carl Phillips, so he's still, you know, he's still properly, it's more than a race win away, also on a Kawasaki, Carl Phillips, but that's going to be interesting. And then Jordan's 23 points ahead of Bradley Jones, who's third.
Yeah.
Dave's other lad that he helps out, Josh Elliott, he was third in the BSB Superstock 1000 race. Taylor McKenzie is kind of ruling that.
He's on a mission. Taylor McKenzie is just doing so well. He seems almost untouchable, really.
The top four in the championship finished in the top four in the race, just not in the quite the same order. We had Taylor McKenzie, Keith Farmer, Josh got on the podium just under a second ahead of Ian Hutchinson. Hutchie is actually second in the championship. So you've got Taylor's on 133, Hutchison on 110, Keith Farmer's on 106, and then Josh is a little way back on 88. with the old warhorse Michael Rutter behind him in 77 points. Yeah. So, you know, good for him. So that's going quite well. Right then, on to the most important part of every show.
Yeah, definitely.
Craiglow's still way out in front, but with Shothole Racing, CLLFC, he's on 2,102 points. And his available budget is 1.2 million.
That seems unrealistic, but I guess since Jorge Lorenzo is doing so badly, he could probably.
Yeah. Stuart Nibbs has closed the gap a bit. It's only 99 points now. He's 2,003. He's on. He's got 3.5 million spare. I'm like, wow. Okay.
That seems like, surely that must be wrong. No.
I might have taken that snapshot in between him doing transfers, so he might have got rid of Lorenzo in exchange for, I don't know, me. And I don't know. Nibs is knee sliders anyway. In third place is Royce Farrell, who is 55 points behind Stewart with Team B side, and he's on 1948 points. But the bit we're all really interested in is who's winning out of the hosts. Who's winning out of the hosts, Harry?
Winning out of the hosts is I don't know, some guy called Martin Darlington, I think is how you pronounce it. He's 19th overall with 1,712 points.
Yeah, we've kind of really spread out, haven't we? Scott's on 1,141. I have no idea how I got nearly 600 points clear of Scott, because he knows an awful lot about more about bike racing than I do. But then so do you. Scott is in 100th position with Team Moto Dog. And then, Harry, you're, 79 points behind him in 112th.
Yeah,
necessary faster.
Necessary change team should be my name, because cannot even remember who is on my team. So maybe after this recording, I'll go finally actually change that.
Dave is 133rd on 937 points with Dipper Racing. And Len is proudly propping us all up in 171st. Len, do you know what? Len has gone up every week for about 2 months in places. He's on 690 points. This is just bizarre, because I think Len knows an awful lot more about racing than I do. Moto Lenzo is his team, and I'm over 1,000 points ahead of him. But then I think Len picked it like a holding pattern team at the before the season started, and then he just keeps forgetting to go back. We just can't be arsed.
Yeah, no, I can confirm that I don't think Len has changed his team or even opened it once. So
no, you should get some kind of bonus points for that. As we keep saying, he's still got Marco Melandri in his MotoGP team. So the racing coming up. The next thing we got is BSB at Brands Hatch next weekend. Not this coming weekend, the weekend after, 5th to 7th of August, Brands Hatch, and it's the proper Brands Hatch GP circuit.
Yeah.
Then we go to Austria on the weekend, my first weekend at home. That's going to be difficult. But hi, honey. Yeah, I'm really glad to be back in the UK. MotoGP's on. Can you turn over from whatever it is everyone else is watching? And then after that, we've got more MotoGP, and a week later in the Czech Republic, Brno. Thank goodness we still go there. And then we got Brands Hatch. Then we got Cadwell Park, 27th to the 29th of August, where Dave's going to be back there. So anyone going to Cadwell Park, look out for Dave and go and say hello. I'm sure we'll give you more information about Motopod meetup. Then we're back to MotoGP, the British Grand Prix. Same weekend.
Both Dave and I, I'm almost certain, will be at the British GP. So there will
Of course, you're back in Blighty, aren't you now?
Yes, there will definitely be some sort of meetup. We might have to do two, because I'm not sure when I can pop out, because usually we do the meetups during Moto3 practice, but I'll be a bit busy during Moto3 practice. So yeah, we'll keep you updated on that one, as we say. Of course, this upcoming weekend, there is the Suzuka 8-hour race on. That's being shown on Eurosport, and that starts at like 3 a.m. Central European time. So feel free to wake up then.
It starts here in Qatar about 20 minutes before I leave to go to work at 5:20 in the morning.
Damn.
And it finishes about 40 minutes before I get home from work. So I'm actually going to miss it all live. So I will be trying to record it in some, and then just watch it on fast forward.
Yeah, I watched the Suzuka 8 hour last year. It's pretty interesting. 8 hours, 8 hours is a pretty long time. I'm not going to lie, but it's pretty interesting.
But the point is making there, we've got the Austrian Grand Prix MotoGP, Brno MotoGP, Silverstone MotoGP, Misano MotoGP, before the next World Superbike race, which is Lausitzring on the 17th, 18th September. And the week before, clashing with the San Marino Grand Prix at the Circuit di Marco Simoncelli, is the final round of Moto America at the New Jersey Motorsports Park, where Cameron Bobier should, all things being equal, secure the title in the Superbikes. Josh Hayes could do it, but he needs at least one DNF from Cameron Bobier, really.
Yep, and hopefully we should have a couple of Americans to talk about that one in the upcoming shows, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of which, Dave and I did say last week that next week we'd be taking a break. We're actually not going to. We're not going to tell you what it is, but we have a hopefully an exciting and very interesting show, which will be coming to you next week, quite early in the week, probably. So you can look forward to that. So do keep an eye on your iTunes feed or your RSS feed or the Motorpod Facebook fan page or the Twitter feed, where we will let you know when it's out, but we might not quite tell you until you hear it what it's about.
Yes, exactly. So on that mysterious note...
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll give you a clue. I'm probably going to get to play my little fanfare again.
Yes, that is the only clue that you will get until that show. So until then, I guess it's bye from me. I think we've covered everything, to be honest.
Yep. It's goodbye from him and it's goodbye from him.
Okay, well, we'll catch everyone next week, I guess. Ciao, everyone.
Good night now. We'll